Welcome to the Nerd Party.
Welcome to Aggressive Negotiations, a Star Wars podcast, but not your average Star Wars podcast. Here we plumb the esoteric depths of the Star Wars galaxy. I'm one of your hosts, Jedi Master John Mills, and with me as always is Jedi Master Matthew Rushing. Matthew, how you doing today?
I'm doing great, John. Of course, I don't even know what that word esoteric means. I'm just kidding.
Of course
I don't even
do.
Know what that means.
That's the final question on the Jedi Trials test is what does the word esoteric mean? And if you can answer that question, then you get your lightsaber and a lollipop. That's the thing is most people don't care about the lightsaber, but they care about the lollipop.
Well, it's been so long since I took that test, you know? It's just years ago now.
It's like the driver's ed test. Like if they gave it to me now, I'd be like, I don't know.
Don't even want to ask me how many blinkers you have to have on a speeder.
Well... we're going to continue this week. Last week, we opened a series on the Jedi, suggested by one of our listeners. And so we're going to continue on the Jedi theme because it really is one of the richer topics that is there in the Star Wars galaxy. And I want to start it off with a question for you, Matthew. And it's something I've been thinking about because recently both of us read Star Wars Battlefront Twilight Company to discuss it over on the 602 Club over on Trek FM. And the question I have for you is this. Would the galaxy have been better off without the Jedi?
Oh, God, that's an interesting question.
Setting aside all of the story stuff, where obviously you have wise Yoda asking deep philosophical questions about the nature of life and the universe and everything like that. Setting all of that aside, a lot of the problems of the galaxy seem to come from the Jedi. And that's just the root of the question, because we've read yet another book that deals with no Jedi, and it's just on my mind now.
I think that's an interesting question, and so I have to go all the way back to the idea of why the Jedi are formed way, way back when, and the only thing we have is non-canon now with the Dawn of the Jedi comic, and... You know, there were these people who could use a power called the Force, and they began to segment into groups, people who used it for power and people who didn't. And the Jedi became this group who used it for, you know, basically good. And so the idea of would the galaxy be better off without the Jedi? I think the answer has to be no, because then who would be there to stop people who were using this massive power, this, you know, unstoppable power for evil? You know,
so you're attacking it from the angle. Your answer is people would have figured out how to use the Force for evil. The Sith, essentially, whether they were called the Sith or not, would have arisen no matter what. So the Jedi are the answer to that. The Jedi have to exist simply as a response to evil.
Well, and because I think I would come to the idea of absolute power corrupts absolutely. And unless you have rules in place to control this power and rules for how to use it, I mean, you come down to the question, are people... inherently good or they inherently evil? And if you hand somebody all the power in the universe through the Force, are they going to use it for good or are they going to use it for evil? And even in the Star Wars universe, it seems like people aren't really necessarily inherently good because, you know, you have to be taught to use the Force in a way that you control that power and that you don't use it for attack or, as you know, all the things Yoda said, a Jedi does not use for aggression or attack or any of these things. He uses it for knowledge and peace and all the...
And defense.
Yeah, defense.
Sure.
So, but that has to be instilled in you, it seems like, because otherwise it's naturally, you know, it's like the question of, if you're invisible, are you going to be somebody who does things that are good, or are you going to be somebody who does things that are bad? I mean, nobody can see you, so.
Yeah, but tying back to what we were talking about, because, of course, power corrupts. So, and of course, you can make the argument the Jedi are corrupt. In the previous episode, we talked about where the Jedi have been, where they're going, and, you know, where they went wrong, and institutionalizing things. I mean, to speak to your idea of rules and everything, do you need a Jedi Order to instill those values? Because let's move out of the Star Wars galaxy for a second and say Superman, right? Superman is simply raised by decent people. He has the power to destroy everything if he wants to, but he uses it all for good simply by virtue of being in a loving family, right? Although, of course, you have Red Son that, you know, he lands in the Soviet Union in this alternate universe, and he's still a decent person. He's just fighting for, you know, what we would call the wrong cause, but he's doing it for the right motivations just because he's an inherently good person. Because I think your thesis is interesting, where it's like the Sith would have arisen no matter what, or something like the Sith would have arisen. And so you need something that is a dogmatic answer to it, something to stand in the breach, as it were, because if a couple of people with access to this power do go bad, if there's no organized resistance to them or no organized way to respond to them that also knows how to use this power, things go off the rails really quickly. But I don't know. I still stick to the idea of, because instead of going with Superman, let's go with Anakin. Anakin, if he had been left on Tatooine, if he truly is a child of destiny and those sorts of things, and the Force can exert a will through the midichlorians, Anakin is going to enter his role in the galaxy no matter what. So again, just having the Jedi present is actually a bad thing, because in a way they're trying to subvert his natural destiny and shape it to their own ends.
Well, I think too, the most interesting question with that though is that what happens if Anakin is trained by Qui-Gon and not Obi-Wan, and Qui-Gon dies and therefore doesn't get the opportunity to be that person who understands the living Force in a way that no other Jedi does at that time, who is a little bit more of a maverick and probably is going to give Anakin the right kind of leeway in areas, but a little bit more disciplinarian in areas in which he needs, you know, because he's more experienced. He's more experienced than Obi-Wan. It's not Obi-Wan's fault that he's handed the Child of Destiny, and everybody on the council kind of want to wash their hands of him. And, hey, you're just a brand new Jedi Knight, but here, train the Child of Destiny.
Well, okay, let me turn that on its ear, though, because I agree. Obi-Wan is more of an older brother character, and he has no business being Anakin's. Like, Anakin needs a Qui-Gon or even a Windu or a Yoda to control him. Yoda needs a real authority figure in that place. And Obi-Wan doesn't have the, even though the word is overused all over the place, Obi-Wan doesn't have the gravitas to instill that respect. And
it's nothing against him. It's because
he's just not ready for
this. Yeah.
Yeah. He even admits when he's a ghost, he's like, I thought I could train him as well as Yoda. I was wrong. So let me turn it on its ear. And I agree with you. If he's trained by Qui-Gon, he turns out different. Why would the council allow Obi-Wan to train him? Because Qui-Gon's dying and he says, the boy, you know, is a chosen one. He will bring balance. Train him. Obi-Wan takes that as a personal charge of Qui-Gon saying, you need to train him. I would argue that Qui-Gon's using his last energy. He's like, just make sure he's trained. He's not necessarily saying, you train him, Obi-Wan. He's saying, somebody's got to train him.
Well,
Doesn't the council intercede?
I think that it becomes pretty clear, at least to me in episode one, that Obi-Wan is pushing and they allow it to happen. I don't know. The council just doesn't take the responsibility on itself the way it should at that point. It's a failing of the council. We've talked about this before on the 602 Club, but Yoda isn't copacetic with the rest of the council at this point. He is very against Anakin being trained, and yet he is overruled by the rest of the council that Obi-Wan can train him. That's fine. But it is very strange that there is not more oversight in that. And or, yeah, why don't you hand him over to somebody like a Jedi Master who's been sitting on the council? You know, give him to, give him to, like, I don't know, Kit Fisto or, you know, yeah. Mace Windu. Kit Fisto, because, and I say that because of what we see from him in the Clone Wars, he's very happy-go-lucky. He's a really easygoing guy, but he seems to be also have been a good master.
Well, okay, when I forget the name of his Padawan, but when they go to Lair of Grievous, his Padawan was a Mon Calamari, which
right, and it's
species.
Namir or I can't remember his name.
Whatever his name is, look at how wrong that Padawan situation goes. So would Kit Fisto have been a good master for him?
Yeah. Well, his Padawan too. You get the feeling that he had been made a knight a little bit too early because of the Clone Wars. Like you get the feeling like he needed a little bit more time to mature, and that they had, you know, he had passed the trials enough that the Jedi made him a Jedi. But you do get the feeling in the Lair of Grievous that his Padawan still needed that tutelage, you know, and so the council is in a different place at that point. But yeah, I think it's an interesting question of who do you give this huge charge to, and why are you giving it to a novice? And again, it's nothing against Obi-Wan. Obi-Wan's going to be a great Jedi, but you're giving him so much responsibility that if you really believe this could be the chosen one, the child of promise, the one who's going to save the galaxy from itself, why are you giving it to somebody who's never trained anyone and just became, you know, a knight himself?
So that ties into my original question in two different ways, I feel, because and let's come back to this. The first one I'm going to throw out there is, can you then make the argument that Palpatine has some sort of influence, some sort of shadowy influence on the council by that point? Granted, he's only elected chancellor at the end of episode one, but is there some sort of political influence he's able to exert on the council that causes these things to fall into place because it's to his benefit? And that ties into the second point, which is, once again, the mere existence of the Jedi allows Palpatine to use the Jedi as the lever by which to turn the universe against itself, the galaxy against itself. So once again, if the Jedi aren't there, even if a Sith ascends to power, with the Jedi not there, because evil by its own, you know, by its own accord consumes itself. So, you know, and that's why the rule of two was put in place, where, you know, there's only one master and one apprentice, one to have the power, one to seek it when you talk about the Sith. So evil will always consume itself and eventually descend into chaos and destroy itself. So again, the mere presence, the mere existence of the Jedi gives the structure that's necessary for Anakin to be put in a position where Palpatine can use him as a weapon. Is it too much of a stretch to say that? Is it possible that Palpatine just basically read the tea leaves and saw that the mere existence of the Jedi gave him what he needed?
No, this does come from some non-canon sources, but, you know, until it's really overwritten, I think the Darth Plagueis book does a great job of explaining how much Palpatine learns from his master Sidious, and just how much the dark side is growing at that point. So I really feel like that the Jedi don't understand it in episode one, but that the dark side is already starting to cloud their judgment. Is the fact that obviously Palpatine has been behind the scenes working his way into this position to put him in a place where, one, he's influencing the Trade Federation, he's got this, you know, apprentice Darth Maul, and he's ready to strike, and yes, he is going to start to dismantle the Jedi Order from the inside out, even though they don't know it.
Okay, but since the Force seeks, I'm really enjoying your answers, but and so I'm just trying to like sort of hammer it from every angle. But if the Force seeks balance, as is the thesis that's put forward in at least all of Lucas's movies, which is still a weird thing to say. I'm going to keep saying that it's a weird thing to say that there's a Star Wars movie that Lucas had nothing to do with.
Yeah, it's very true.
It just blows my mind. But the thesis of Lucas's movies is that the Force always seeks balance. You know, everything seeks balance. Nature seeks balance. Everything seeks an equilibrium. So again, if the Jedi aren't there, the dark side has no way to become ascendant to that point. There's no reason for the dark side to cloud everything because there's no light for the cloud to move in front of. And so in a sense, maybe it's okay. Maybe I need to reformulate the question. Maybe after the Sith were destroyed the first time, the Jedi needed to disband in order to keep it so that the Force didn't see any need to gather the dark side against
it. Well, I'm going to answer your question, and I think this is the most definitive way that we can. To Force Awakens when Maz is talking about how the only fight there is against the dark side, and that that evil has taken many forms. She's seen it take form in the Sith. She's seen it take form in the Empire and now in the First Order. So apparently in the Star Wars galaxy, evil is very much a part of this galaxy, and it exists, and it must be fought because it continues to rear its ugly head like a snake that needs to have it cut off. And therefore, it is whoever that is to challenge that evil. And for at least 1,000 years and more, it had been the Jedi. And that it was they who had taken on the mantle. Now, obviously, we talked a lot about last week the ways in which the Jedi got lost in themselves and their dogma and lost their opportunity to really stay those Guardians of the Galaxy. And
trademark copyright Disney.
Yeah, exactly. It's all part of
same. In both senses, actually.
Yeah,
there
it's
you
all
go.
Part of the same galaxy now.
Oh my gosh, is that the only reason they bought Star Wars? Is
probably
they
so they can have a crossover with Star-Lord and Anakin. So, yeah.
It works for me. Go on.
But I really do think that that's the only way that I can actually feel like I can answer the question with any definiteness. If that's a good word, is that
definitiveness.
Thank you. Is that evil continues to rear its head and therefore the Jedi are necessary. Now, how they're necessary and what that Jedi order looks like is a different story, because I think it's clear for quite a long time in the Old Republic, the Jedi were great. They were doing exactly what they should be doing. But somewhere around year 700 or something, it seems like maybe things start to go a little wrong. They get a little dogmatic, a little too entrenched in their ways. And I'm just making that time period up. But you know what I'm saying?
One of the things I wonder is, wasn't there a reference, I think, in the episode one novelization where Qui-Gon, I think, says at one point that the Jedi existed before knowledge of the Force even did? Like the Jedi were simply almost like just a monastic order that was there. And then suddenly one day somebody like basically lifts a cup with their mind and like, whoa, hey, look what I just did. I swear I read that somewhere. But like there's such a volume of material that is self-contradictory through the years that I might have dreamed that at some point. It's entirely possible that I just imagined it.
That is a great question. I don't really know. But whether or not the Jedi are important or needed, I think, to me, it does seem like they are. And I think we can see that the Jedi were needed in the prequel trilogy, but they were played, and they didn't realize it until it was too late. The Jedi were needed in the original trilogy because it was really Luke needing to be that person to face that evil that way that what was needed. And it looks like in the sequel trilogy too, it is going to come down to the Jedi coming back again destroy this new evil. And just how they do that is going to be the biggest thing that we watch happen.
But see, I think that's interesting in and of itself, because that turns it around, because in a sense, the dark side is ascendant or has ascended. Luke is the last Jedi, so far as we know, right? By this point in episode 7. So in a sense, the Jedi have become the Sith, right? Because there's only two of them at the end of episode 7.
Right.
So far as we know of, there could be more scattered around. Who knows? Different point of view arguments and stuff like that. But is Snoke overplaying his hand then? For me, it just gets into this whole mechanics of not the Jedi Knights in specific then. Is it just the presence of Force users? Like, is this all just anybody tapping into the Force is what screws everything up and sets all of these things in motion? Would the wars have happened regardless? Do you think that there would have been a Death Star even if there wasn't a Palpatine? Do you think that there would have been a Yoda even if they didn't know how to float in the air and use lightsabers? Like, how necessary is the Force to this story? I understand philosophically. I'm not talking about in terms of a story or the lessons that Lucas was trying to teach, anything like that. Because, you've often said the Jedi are your favorite element of Star Wars, and I think that's definitely true of a lot of us. Do the Star Wars stories work without this Force? Does the galaxy work better without the Force, or is it just necessary for the whole story to work at all?
I think that is it. Is that without the Jedi, without the Force, mm-hmm. Star Wars isn't Star Wars.
Mm.
Star Wars revolves around this father-son story connected by this spirituality at the heart of it. That the galaxy is driven by something more than just machines. It's driven by something bigger, almost ununderstandable, and mm-hmm. the Force itself seems to have a will and a way to move people to do things. And so the question of whether or not the Jedi are needed or the galaxy would have been better without them, well, the Force itself seems to call people to do things through itself. And so it's like you can almost blame the Force for this. How and what balance looks like in Star Wars is different, because it seems to be to me that, and I think even George has said that for Star Wars, balance is there being no Sith, there being no evil Force users. I don't know how that means balance, but that's what it seems like that to me George has been driving at, because, when you get to the end of Return of the Jedi, there are no evil Force users that we know of, and there's one Jedi, and that's balanced somehow.
Well, I mean, Luke is the thing that I've always that I've had to reconcile with Episode 7 existing at all, or finding out that there's the Knights of Ren or anything like that, is the simple fact that Luke at the end of Episode 6 is supposed to be the synthesis of the dark and the light. That's why he's the hero dressed in black. He has a mechanical hand, but he retains his humanity. Like he is. The perfect being, so to speak, in terms of Force balance. But one of the things that I want to sort of hammer on because this is a thought that I've had, is that the whole Star Wars saga is almost like a war amongst the midichlorians, if you think about it, because the Force is struggling to find balance, and everything is an expression of the Force. To get back to something you quoted from one of the Clone Wars episodes, that a Jedi is a pure expression of the Force. In the Clone Wars episode where the kids go to get the crystals for
the gathering. Yoda says the Force made physical a Jedi is.
Right. So is this all just a war being conducted by microscopic organisms that have their own beef with each other? Because the midichlorians are the manner by which the Force speaks to you. So is the Force telling the evil Force users to do evil? And if so, why would the Force deliver two different messages to people? Or is it that the midichlorians are saying one thing, but the evil Force users are mishearing it.
Let's go to Augustine. Is it that everybody is depraved, and therefore your natural inclination is to do evil instead of good, and therefore the Force moving towards people towards the light as Jedi is something it has to do to counteract the natural course of things, which is people with access to the Force without the push towards the light would naturally just be dark side users. That's some Augustinian theology for you.
Okay. I like that. I like that line of thought. But then let me throw a wrench into that. Because if the midichlorians have some sort of, if they're a microscopic life form that resides in all living cells, per Qui-Gon, per an actual line in episode one, this is not expanded universe stuff, midichlorians are in all the living Force. It's the manner by which the life can interact with the Force. Is there some sort of consciousness then with the midichlorians? If somebody starts using it for evil, can't the midichlorians then say, because if their inclination is to get rid of evil in the galaxy and only have the Force used for good, shouldn't the midichlorians intercede when a Palpatine or a Darth Plagueis or a Darth Bane or a Darth Vader, or when somebody comes up Snoke comes into play, shouldn't the midichlorians then say, okay, you know what? You don't get your Force allotment anymore. I'm going dark and you can't use me.
No, I think what it is that they create something to stop you.
Oh,
they
okay.
influence to create, I mean, well, Anakin is Force born. And somehow he is the vergence and the Force that is created as the answer to this ultimate evil that has arisen.
But also the
Palpatine.
Jedi Order to wipe it all out.
Somewhat. I mean, the Force seems to create things or move people into places to stop evil that it sees. And yeah, that's a really interesting. I mean, we're talking about the esoteric nature of Star Wars.
As promised in the opening.
As promised.
Yeah.
So I think that's really interesting because, you know, something that I was actually thinking about, John, is we're kind of talking about this idea of the Jedi and the Force, is the ways in which characters use different parts of the Force, but they all don't necessarily seem to have access to the Force all in the same way.
Right.
You know what I'm
yes.
saying? Like, because I was thinking about this because we were kind of talking about, okay, EU characters the other day and, even new characters that we're seeing in Star Wars like in Ezra or Kanan and the ways in which all of them have different Force. But I was specifically thinking of the way that Qorn Horn in the he can't do telekinesis.
All right. You're right.
That's a part of him that he doesn't have access to. He doesn't do it well. Or the fact that Ezra, he has this strong connection with living beings like animals and things like that. He's a really strong connection with them. Those kind of things, the way in which the Force works itself out in these different characters, giving them different abilities that not every Jedi can do. Most Jedi seem to have a lot of the same core basics, but then there are other things to which they're really good at that other Jedi just aren't. And I think that's a really interesting thing was we're talking about this. How are the ways in which the Force then works itself out in these different characters and gives them different abilities that not necessarily every other Jedi might have?
Interesting. And you know what? I think that is a great topic for another episode. I think that we've got something to explore for our next episode. I really like that, talking about Force powers. But speaking of good vibes and bad vibes in the Force, we've gotten a lot of good vibes on iTunes. And people have answered the call for reviews on iTunes. And I as promised last time, I'm thinking maybe we could read a couple of those reviews here on Aggressive Negotiations.
Yeah, I'm really excited. We got a great review, a 5-star review from Cold Pizza 320. And they said, "This podcast is it. Of all the Star Wars podcasts out there, this is the one that you will learn the most. Matt and John go beyond the big news that everybody already knows and dig deep into the galaxy of Star Wars. After listening, you will learn the great appreciation and knowledge both Matt and John have for Star Wars." Man, thank you so much, Cold Pizza. That really means a lot.
That is fantastic, and it's a very, very appreciated review. That's really flattering. I really like that a lot. And then we have a review from T. Riddell 24, or maybe it's Triddle 24. I don't know.
Triddle. I like that.
Yeah. It sounds like triple. I like that. it's also a 5-star review, and the title of it is "Great from the Start." "I know and love these guys." Oh, I know who this is. "Matt and John together are a powerhouse you want to listen to. They said at the beginning that they would stay positive, and I believe them. These are the people you want to dissect Star Wars." Oh, okay. So we're sort of like the mad scientists of Star Wars then.
Ooh,
we're dissecting the frog that is Star Wars. Gently. Doing it gently to stay positive.
Oh, goodness. Well, I love that we're getting the opportunity to talk about these reviews with people, and we really do appreciate it. It means so much to us, you know, being a new podcast. Reviews are the things that really help people find our show in iTunes. We've been the new and noteworthy section, so we want to say thank you. And we want you to continue to connect with us. You can go to Twitter at The Jedi Masters and interact with both John and I. We both run that Twitter account. You can find all of our stuff at thenerdparty.com. Check everything out there, of course, of the other shows that we have on the network at The Nerd Party. And then if you'd like to email us, you can do that simply at a brand new email address that I'm really glad that we have now because we're part of The Nerd Party. And that email address is an@thenerdparty.com. So super simple, an@thenerdparty.com. So please make sure you do that. We'd love to hear from you guys. We've already had some emails, and we really appreciate that.
Yeah.
And keep coming with the show ideas too, because the last few shows that we've had have come from your ideas, and we want to make sure that we continue talking about the things that you find interesting.
Yeah.
Now, John, before we go, goodness, so much going on here at Aggressive Negotiations. Make sure you let everybody know where they can find you before we get out of here.
Well, as you said, you can find us at all of the show contact information. But if you want to interact with me personally on Twitter, it's Kessel Junkie. And you can also find me over on the Trek FM network as part of a podcast called Commentary Trek Stars that I co-host with Mike Schindler. And you can find me on a podcast called Words with Nerds that I co-host with my good buddy Craig Sorrell, where we have a fun time dissecting a variety of topics, you know, throughout the entire geek universe, as it were. And we have a lot of fun there. And so, Matthew, where can they interact with you personally?
Well, you can find me on Twitter as well at MattRushing02. You can also find me on the Trek FM network doing The Orb with Christopher Jones, which is all about Deep Space Nine. I also do a show over there called Literary Treks. We're talking about the books and the comics of Star Trek. We interview the authors. It's a lot of fun, so make sure you check that out. And I also do our general geek show there called The 602 Club, and that's just a great place to geek out about all things that don't have anything to do with Star Trek. We even talk some Star Wars over there, comics, favorite movie. I mean, it's just the best place to hang out, so I really hope you will check out The 602 Club. And John, I gotta say, I think it's time to close negotiations.
Matthew, negotiations are closed.